Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better healthcare. Learn more at nm.org/better.
9:42. Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN. And time for the Week in Health. For that, we go to our pal, Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. I hope you had a wonderful holiday, Doctor. Was that the case? Or were you working? Doctor,
it was,
doctors are 24/7.
I did work Thanksgiving, yep, but I had the rest of the weekend off, which was tremendous. I hope yours was a good one.
It was indeed. Do emergency rooms tend to be busier or quieter on holidays?
Well, I think the in the old days you could get out in the ambulance bay and throw a football around. It was so quiet. But you know the nature of healthcare today is it truly is a 24/7 business. That being said, Thanksgiving was fairly light for the most part, at least during the day. So that's always it's always nice to give everybody a little bit of a breather and then dive back into it.
Yeah. Do you have people coming into the emergency room because they've eaten too much, you know, and they're suffering some kind of gastric issue?
Yes. Yes, we do. And it's not just Thanksgiving. Any kind of major holiday, there's typically a run of folks that, like you say, overdid it, and their tummies are hurting. And we're happy to take care of those issues. They're usually fairly easy to diagnose and treat, and people are pretty satisfied when they feel better.
What do you do when someone has overeaten? Do you give them a bicarbonate, or what do you do?
Well, I think the first thing is to make sure that is indeed the case,
right?
Because it can certainly mimic or mask something more serious underlying. And so we try to make sure there's nothing life-threatening or organ-threatening at play. And then it's, the remedies that you might think of, a little bit of Gas-X, maybe a little antacid, sometimes even some pain medicine, or if there's nausea or diarrhea, then we can certainly treat those issues as well. So it just kind of depends on, where the person's at. We try to meet people where they're at, and there's plenty of both over-the-counter remedies that we can provide and also remedies that aren't available over-the-counter.
Yeah, talk about, symptoms seeming to be one thing when really there's something else, and that's, where our emergency room people are so great in figuring all that stuff out. I had a friend, it was either Christmas Eve or Thanksgiving. It was a holiday. And a friend of mine had a nice dinner. And then she calls. The dinner is over. She calls me like an hour later that she's having chest pains. And can I come and help her and take her to the hospital? And that was convinced she was having a heart attack. Took her rushed her to the hospital, to Northwestern, actually, downtown. And it was some esophageal thing. I don't remember exactly what it was called, but it was basically, I guess, the motion of the esophagus of pushing the food down your gullet, has a sort of a rhythm to it. When it gets thrown off a little bit, it mimics the pain of a heart attack, when really it's not exactly food being stuck in your esophagus. But it's as simple as that and not as scary as a heart attack. I mean, you must see these kinds of things once in a while, right?
Well, that's more than once in a while. It's extremely common both ways, meaning that people come in with chest pain and they think they're dying, and it is the esophagus, which passes right next to the heart on its way down to the stomach. Or alternatively, people come in with a little bit of nausea, and in fact, it is a heart attack.
Mm.
So it can be very confusing. And as you allude to, there are a number of structures in the and around the chest, and the wiring is very kind of haphazard, if you want to think about it, like electrical wiring, like in a house. The heart electrical wires that go to the brain that tell you to sense pain pass right over the esophagus, and so the brain can be confused. It can't pinpoint with a great deal of accuracy where that discomfort might be coming from. So that's where we come in, and of course our friends in the x-ray department and the lab department, don't want to forget about all the wonderful people that help us in the hospital figure out what exactly is going on. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes work, stagecraft, if you will, that allows us to do our job so well.
Yeah, and thank goodness that you're all there for that. I've heard one news story after another this week of salmonella-tainted something or other. There's been two or three different kinds of foods that have been apparently tainted with salmonella and recalled. How do you know if you have been affected by this? I mean, you know, keep an eye out for the news stories so you're not ingesting any of this. But how does one know if they get salmonella?
Yeah, it's really disturbing to see these reports, and I'm sorry that we're having to go through this. I think most recently a recall of cucumbers, if I read correctly. It's generally in the GI tract, meaning your symptoms can range from diarrhea to just abdominal cramps to fever. But typically the symptoms would be longer than a day. And that's generally what I tell people. You know, these kind of viral outbreaks like norovirus or some of the other GI viruses tend to be in and out the door very quickly, similar to food poisoning. And when I just want to be clear that when we talk about food poisoning, we're not talking about things like salmonella. We're talking about less severe viral or bacterial illnesses. But if you're going longer than 24 hours, and particularly if you're having a fever, if the vomiting won't stop, if the pain is severe, that's a sign that it might be something like salmonella.
Yeah, I think there was the cucumbers to which you refer. There were eggs that were recalled. There were two or three different things. So, you know, everybody be careful out there. And now I would guess this weekend is prime Thanksgiving dinner leftover season. You know, people are probably, oh, let me finish up those leftovers that are in the fridge. How safe is that to eat two or three days after the case?
Yeah, we have a 2-day rule in our house, but we're also fairly restrictive. You know, I think 2 to 3 days is okay. When you get past that mark, even though items may be refrigerated, bacteria can still grow, and so I definitely recommend, you know, being cautious with that. And some, not all foods are created equal, and so, you know, the best thing you can do is if you're uncertain, look it up, and there's plenty of resources online that can guide you in the right direction. But certainly for meats or gravies, a couple of days, and then it's time to move on.
Yeah, what I do with my leftovers, I mean, like on Thursday, on Thanksgiving Day, I would, before I put them in the fridge, I would have made them as airtight as possible. It's actually the oxygen, right, that speeds along any potential danger. So I wrap it in as much, you know, plastic wrap, squeeze all the air out, and put them then in a sealed container after that, and then try to get to them no more than two or three days after the fact. That's probably safe, right?
Well, there's nothing wrong with sealing, although, you know, there's still oxygen in there as you described, and that's enough for the bacteria. So unless you're vacuum sealing it, truly vacuum sealing, it probably doesn't offer a ton of protection. And that being said, I'll just tack on to that there's also bacteria, anaerobic bacteria, meaning not needing oxygen, that are in there. So,
oh, really?
You're darned if you do and darned if you don't.
I thought it had to have some oxygen in order to grow.
Yeah, for the aerobic bacteria, sure, but there are also those germs that can do without.
Mm, okay, all right. Well, today's probably the cutoff day if you're still looking at leftovers from Thursday. We'll continue with Dr. Jeremy Silver in just a moment. I want to get to as many of your calls and texts for the doctor as possible. If you've got questions or comments, 312-981-7200. 312 981-7200. 955, Dr. Jeremy Silver, Director of Emergency Medicine, Kishwaukee Hospital, answering your calls and your texts. 312-981-7200. Ronnie, you're on WGN with Dr. Silver. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, Dr. Silver, for taking my call. I think I overindulged this Thanksgiving, you know, lots of stuffing, cranberry, and the whole works. Anyway, I came home, no problems. Friday, no problems, but Saturday, I'm having a bout with constipation, but what most concerned me also is the fact that my urine is a bright yellow. And I'm saying, I don't remember eating anything that was yellow that would cause that. So, do you have any ideas or suggestions?
Well, first of all, I'm sorry that you're having some problems, yeah. And it's lovely to hear from you regardless. You know, there's so many different things in the diet that can lead the urine to turn yellow. I don't know that a bright yellow color would be super worrisome to me. We start to really get concerned when the urine turns a tea color or a brownish color, and certainly red, which would indicate blood. But, you know, I think if the issue continues, it would be reasonable to give your doctor a call and just have a chat, maybe have them take a look. The other piece of advice I would give, without getting into details on the radio, is if you're having any symptoms that could be associated with a urinary tract infection, and that could be painful urination or increased frequency of urination or a different odor to the urine, for instance, those would be indicators that it might be a good idea to get looked at.
Appreciate your call, Ronnie, and good luck with that. I always get a little scared the day after I eat beets. I love fresh beets, and sometimes that will give you a surprise the next day. So, you know, these are the issues that we talk about on our medical segment. Dr. Jeremy Silver is the medical director of emergency medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Dr. Silver, I hope you have a great day today. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.